Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is a Monday afternoon, the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for tuning in. I appreciate that. If it's Monday, that means the boys from Chicago Inno are in the house. Jim Dahlke and Will Flanagan. Will's the general manager, and Jim is one of the lead reporters for Chicago Inno. And this is the first time all summer long that the three of us have been together. I think that's kind of sad, but...
Oh, is that right? Jeez.
No way. It's just been a couple weeks, Steve.
Well, summer, if you start with Memorial Day, right? He was off, and then you were off last week. So.
That's true. So we've only had 3 weeks of summer? Is that how you're...
Pretty much. You're done with it already?
Never.
Sweated it out.
All right, so let's, you know, obviously we're dealing with great tragedy and sadness today in this country and really around the world. But when it comes to tech and innovation and all of that, I'm hearing renewed these calls that Facebook and Twitter and other social media outlets need to be more aggressive in ferreting out would-be terrorists. And I just feel like maybe that's – I'm not sure what they can do or where we are on that. I mean, can you add anything to that, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, the age-old question of, you know, freedom of speech versus, you know, the safety. I mean, I think that's a topic that that we're grappling with here across a range of tech companies now. I mean, Facebook is certainly the, you know, it's used by over a billion people, so the government and other organizations are going to want to make sure that they're doing everything they can to promote safety. And it's an interesting sort of dilemma, right? But Facebook has, over the years, gotten some more pressure from government officials to do more to stop terrorism, and they are doing a little bit of that. They are removing accounts from people who are related and are part of terrorist groups, and it has assembled a team focused on terrorist content, and it's helping to promote counter speech or posts that aim to discredit militant groups like the Islamic State. So I think that the jury may be still out as to how effective this is, but I mean, at least Facebook is taking a couple of steps in the direction towards safety.
Yeah, I mean, 1.6 billion users.
That's a lot of people
that are publishing a tremendous amount of content. That's the thing. It's, you know.
Yeah, but if they know what kind of underwear I wear, right? I mean, if they know how to sell me the particular flavor of Fruit Loops that I buy, they probably can keep track of some of this stuff too, or not.
No, I think they're keeping. I mean, a lot of the violence that's happening in the city here in Chicago is starting on Facebook. I mean, it is a platform that promotes a, you know, we you know, roll our eyes with all the cat videos and the birthdays and all, but it is used as a platform to promote good. It's used as a platform to promote bad, and there's a lot of it. And I don't know if it's Facebook's responsibility to try to get rid of all of the bad, because then I guess it loses what it is. But I think Facebook and all of these social networks is to be a platform that allows for this messaging to exist so that these agencies can spot it. Thankfully, it's not happening all in the dark web behind these closed doors. It is public and transparent.
It is knowable.
And it is, you know, being used as a tool to stop a lot of this stuff.
Right. And if your Facebook or your Twitter, part of your appeal is the fact that people put personal information up there, and they have an expectation that it's not being viewed, right? So they've got to be careful. Obviously, they don't want to foster terrorism, but they have to walk that line in a way.
Mm-hmm. They are getting rid of it. I mean, it's the debate of, you know, how do you become more aggressive? And should they be doing more, more, more? They have this team that is not just allocated to identifying this type of content and removing it, but also promoting counter content to make sure that it's not just about the hate speech, it's about educating people who may fall down that trap as well. And in that way, that's a powerful resource, is that, you know, you're not just kind of deleting, you're adding contents that can hopefully sway someone the other way. And in that way, yeah, Facebook is being aggressive, but it's like, you know, how much? How, you know, do they need to be doing more?
I think they absolutely should, right? I mean, I think it's very difficult to argue that we shouldn't be asking for a little bit more from our social media giants who have this data on potentially dangerous individuals.
That's Jim Dahlke, Will Flanagan here from Chicago Inno. Okay, so there's that. Also, the big news today, Microsoft going after LinkedIn. What's that about?
They went after them. Microsoft acquired LinkedIn. It is the biggest, as long as it all goes through, it for $26 billion, which will be the biggest acquisition of an internet company ever. The second one was when Facebook acquired WhatsApp for about $19 billion. So this is the biggest by a long shot. This is a big deal. Microsoft, you know, they have over 1.2 billion users on its suite of Office products, but it doesn't have a social graph. It's, it's never had a big presence in social media.
So that's what this is, it's social media for Microsoft.
Yeah. I mean, this is a way to kind of integrate that offering. The other thing is LinkedIn, its stock is down. It's been dipping since, you know, for the past 2 years. Its net income has been dropping year over year since 2011. They kind of need a partnership as well. And, you know, again, Microsoft allows for this billion plus users to help kind of sell ads. And it's being positioned early. Again, everyone rushes. Oh my God, this morning they did a great job of keeping it quiet.
Yeah,
usually
really? $26
billion dollar acquisitions get teased a little earlier, but the early positioning is, that's a lot, but this is kind of a win-win.
And this is all about data, right? I mean, basically Microsoft is buying the company org chart for the entire world. I mean, LinkedIn provides so much data on the corporate world, and now Microsoft is going to have that. And you can see Microsoft sort of using LinkedIn in a number of ways, right? You could see it being a Salesforce competitor. You could see them incorporating LinkedIn to some of its Cortana, its AI software, so you can ask Cortana, oh, tell me about who's in my next meeting coming up this afternoon. It has all this LinkedIn data.
Well, I'm about 500 connections behind with people requesting to connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm terrible at LinkedIn. I joined a few years ago and never really followed up. So if you've asked, I'm currently in mid-2015. I'll get there soon.
Well, that's the big thing, right? Like LinkedIn wants people to start using it more frequently. So hopefully this partnership will get people, Microsoft will find a way to get LinkedIn more valuable to the people who are using it.
That's Jim Dahlke, Will Flanagan here from Chicago Inno. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to pay for our restaurant reservations. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for tuning in. A couple of my favorite guys, Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke, are with us as well as they are most Mondays, the brain trust behind Chicago Inno. There's other brain trust involved.
We are maybe 5%
of the brain. Well, that's okay, because we only use 5% of our brain. That's all I use of you guys. Hey, I love this talk story. Now, we've talked about this before, but it's a new sort of platform where if you want a reservation for a restaurant, you got to put up some money, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, online reservations are certainly not new, but Talk is doing things a little differently. They are asking for money in advance, and it's a really interesting business model. And what it's doing is drastically cutting down on restaurant no-shows. So,
which is a big deal.
Yeah, on OpenTable, for example, I mean, you know, you can get a reservation online, but there's nothing to make you actually show up, and it's a big problem for restaurants because they're seeing a ton of no-shows, and so they're scrambling to fill tables when people aren't actually coming to the restaurant. So what Talk does is it takes a deposit. So it ranges from anything from, you know, a $20 deposit at a main dining room to up to thousands of dollars for really extravagant experiences at some of the best restaurants across the world.
So can you go to Talk and browse what they have available? Because it sounds like some of these experiences you wouldn't run across unless you knew where to look.
Exactly. And so, yeah, you can browse on Talk, and they also work directly with the restaurant websites themselves. So the restaurants can post those experiences on their website as well.
So we've talked about them, but the story today is that it's taking off.
Yeah, we've checked up. They're officially a year old this month. So in just a year, Talk is already in over in 80 restaurants in 30 cities, 8 countries across the world. They've processed over $30 million in bookings just exist in their platform. So it's really fascinating to see this type of restaurant reservation model really blow up. And from, I mean, from some really smart guys, Nick Kokonis, the owner of Alinea, and Brian Fitzpatrick, the Google Chicago guy, really they're building a pretty stellar team, and they were doing some really interesting stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the important part. We get a ton of pitches every week advertising, like, oh, you got to hear about this rock star team launching a new startup. And, like, the term rock star team makes me gag. But this is a rock star team.
Sonny and Cher were a rock star team.
This is the guy who started the Google Chicago operation. This is Nick Kokonis, who's behind, you know, some of the most celebrated restaurants in the world. This is a, you know, you can't kind of fantasy cast two better people to launch this kind of infrastructure that could change how we book restaurants. And it's not just about, you know, put a $20 deposit so that you're held liable for showing up. It's also, you know, tickets for restaurant. You can buy a $500 ticket and the transaction's over. You go to the restaurant, you know, you finish your meal, and that's it. The everything is built in.
Well, it seems to me like when you call for a reservation, you're engaged in a contract, but right now there's only one end of that contract holding any responsibility.
And it's beneficial for the restaurant patron as well, because how often do you have a reservation, you show up to the restaurant, and you still have to wait at the bar for 15, 20, 30 minutes because the restaurant can't guarantee your table's going to actually be there because they're accounting for no-shows.
So you guys have to go to Chicago and read more because there's so much there. We've got 45 seconds left. Jim, you wrote a story about a guy who wants to make Chicago sort of a space hub, which is a pretty remarkable thing. So tell me quickly about that.
Yeah, it sounds kind of ridiculous, but he's got a really interesting organization.
His name is George Jackson. The
organization is called New Space Chicago, and it's about bringing the entrepreneurial and startup community in Chicago together to focus on space technology. So they are working. He's working on a company called Orbital Transports that's making spider droids, which is a technology that will actually roam the exterior of a spacecraft to check for damage and leaks.
Well,
and everything
why
like
not?
That.
Everyone can go up from anywhere. You don't have to be on a coast.
And it's not about launch, right? It's about what's the next step after launch. Yeah. Those are the technologies.
And we have a history in manufacturing and aerospace. Why not? Why not Chicago? You know, the Bays can have everything else. Why can't we, you know, become the hub of space privatization?
Why not, indeed? Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke, thanks for coming in, guys. Enjoy your week. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Brad Meltzer knows how to tell a story. He's done it every way imaginable, from his thrillers to television shows, Decoded, to comic books, even children's books about American heroes. Lately, he's back to the thrillers with The House of Secrets, and he joins us now on a phone line. Brad, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to talk to you again. How have you been?
I'm good. I just also need to start by saying thanks, because I'm talking to one of the people who truly knows me from the very start of my career when I just was writing thrillers, and I just appreciate all the support all these years.
You're very gracious, and you're a guy, whoever I call you, you're always happy to pick up the phone and talk. So it's nice to count you among my friends. I appreciate that. Okay, enough of that. I want to talk about the book in a minute, but this is predominantly a business show. I want to kick around leadership. I was watching your commencement address to the University of Michigan Law School recently. You said something that struck me. You said the greatest risk is admitting what you want. And I hadn't thought of it like that before, but explain for me what you mean by that.
Yeah, no. When I got asked to speak in Michigan, I went to my graduation, my reunion from my own school, and half the people from law school were happy and half were miserable. And I spent 6 months trying to figure out what was the difference. And I realized that everyone knows what they want, but the greatest risk you're ever going to take in your life is actually admitting what you want. And that's hard, because if you admit it, what you want, you can actually fail. And that's the scariest thing of all. And for me, I think when I looked at who was happy and who wasn't, it was the people who did one of three things. They had to admit what you want, you got to figure out how to do it. You got to admit what you love, what you're passionate about, and what you care about, what your true authentic self is, right? That's the idea. Who are you? Not for money and not because you need the job, but what do you do when nobody's around? What do you really love? You also have to admit what got you there, so the things that it took to get you there. And to me, one of the most important ones is you got to admit what you're scared of. And for me, my greatest fear, my dad had a really hard time with money growing up, had got fired from a job. He truly, and I'm not talking about like he just lost his money. We lost our stability. He had no place to live. And we lived with my grandmother for, you know, months, because we couldn't even have enough money to do a security deposit on an apartment. And it was scary. Those were scary times. And those, I realized forever that those things terrified me, but they're also what drove me. And when you figure out what you, when you, something that scares you, it's your body's way of telling you that you care about it. So to me, use what you're fearful of and let it be your rocket fuel. Your greatest strength is your greatest weakness, but your greatest weakness is also, harnessed correctly, can be your greatest strength. So let those things you're scared of drive you forward.
Is that life in general, or how do we take that to the office? How do you take that to the workplace?
You know, I think, listen, I think it's, I think you have to take it to the workplace, because what we do all along is we kind of separate work from home, and we think they're two different things, that happiness can be in one and then the job is in the other. But to find your true authentic self as who you are, you got to merge them together. And so to me, if you know, if you love, my favorite, my friends from law school who love their job, half of them love them, half of them hate them. But the ones that love them, it was, are the people who, you know, they love, whether it's copyright law of all things, something small and minor, but they just love that idea. They take that to work and say, you know what, I know it's not the most high-paying version of this, but I'm passionate about it and I want to go for that. And the people that are happiest in my life are the ones that find their passions and figure out a way to bring them into the office.
You brought up fear, too. And, you know, whether it's Decoded or you read this latest book is about the mysteries and conspiracy theories with Benedict Arnold and all of that. You've said in the past that if you, people who believe in conspiracies or the conspiracies they believe in many ways betray their own fears. Explain for me that draw to conspiracy and what that says to people who believe in them.
You know, and that's why all conspiracies are based on, they're based on your fear. So you show me your favorite conspiracy and I'll show you who you are. And I think the best way to illustrate this is, if you want to know who killed JFK, in the 60s we thought that JFK was killed by the Cubans and by the Russians. They were the communists at the height of the Cold War. They were our great enemy. In the 70s, you want to know who killed JFK, we thought, you know, it was the time of Vietnam and of Watergate when we didn't trust the government anymore. So who killed JFK? It was Nixon. It was it was our government. It was LBJ. It was the CIA did it. If you want to look in the 80s, as the Godfather movies were peaking, who killed JFK? It was the mob killed JFK. So decade by decade, if you want to know who killed JFK, it's whoever America is most afraid of at that moment in time. So conspiracy theories, and I do this in the House of Secrets, they're always mirrors. And you hold up that mirror and you'll see what you're afraid of.
Tell me about the House of Secrets a little bit. There's this guy, Jack Nash, who hosts a television show for decades talking about myth or things about conspiracy theories. I guess myths around the world. Now, this sounds a lot like your show, Decoded. Was it based on that?
Yeah, no, listen, I rep from my life here. The show, the TV show gave me access to amazing things. And I got calls from the Department of Homeland Security, from presidents, from President Clinton and former President Bush Sr. I got to go to the White House once and eat in the private dining room there. And I realized in that moment that, Steve, I'm the perfect spy. I know why people tell me these secrets. It's because I host a TV show and because I write these thrillers. And it's perfect cover. I walked in and out of the White House. No one looked twice at me. And I said, I'm going to use that as a plot for the book, that what if you have this conspiracy host who knows all these secrets and all these people, and when he dies, you realize he's actually working for the government. And now his daughter has to figure out his murder. And that's where the book really takes off. And you get to delve into the world of conspiracy.
You co-wrote this book, or explain this for me. Todd Goldberg's name is on the cover as well.
Yeah. So, you know, and this is a good, on the business side, you have to know your limits and your limitations. And to me, someone once, you know, I believe that a good idea is alive. A good idea truly goes out and lives in the universe. There's nothing more powerful in the world than an idea. But someone also told me, a fellow writer, that if you don't do an idea, someone else will do it. If you let a good idea sit around for too long, we know that in business too. If you sit on your great idea for too long, someone else is eventually going to do it. And I realized, you know what, I found this story about Benedict Arnold and George Washington, that in the last moments when Benedict Arnold betrayed George Washington, he wrote him a secret letter. And the letter was delivered to George Washington. The letter said three things. He said, one, don't kill my wife, to his friend George Washington, because she didn't know I was a traitor. He said, two, don't kill the staff. They didn't know I was a traitor. And three, in one of the craziest moments of letter writing history, he says, please send me back my belongings and my clothing. And he basically wants his stuff. And amazingly, George Washington sends it, right? He just put a knife in the back of Washington sends it. But to this day, Steve, nobody knows what is in the baggage that George Washington sends back to Benedict Arnold. And I just became, for almost half a decade now, wondering that question. And I said, you know what, I love this idea and someone's going to do it. And so I brought in Todd Goldberg and said, I'm going to work with someone. You have a choice when you hire a co-writer. You can hire someone who's a lesser writer than yourself, someone who you think is just as good as you, or someone better than yourself. And I hired a literary writer, not a thriller writer, not a mystery writer. I was like, I got the plot. I want someone who can do incredible, beautiful character work. And Todd's book came out a couple months ago, Gangsterland.
Right.
Got nominated for one of the books of the year. He lost to Stephen King. And my publisher said, you got a winner here. And I was like, I told you, he's a killer. And so that's where it started.
I want to ask you one more question about leadership.
Yeah.
Because I'm also reading, you're writing op-ed pieces in the New York Daily News about the book Away, but tying it to the presidential campaign. I mean, are you going to get more political?
You know, I don't see myself getting political, but I, you know, inevitably, as I'm researching the novel, I find these issues that just really blow my mind. And on that one, we found a dictator, as I was researching, that was actually secretly working for the United States. And it made me realize that as I looked around today, you know, we have our two presidential candidates, you know, two leaders who spend all their time calling each other's names and saying, you're good, you know, you're bad, and I'm good. But that's not how the presidency is. The questions that cross the president's desk are really tough. And they're like, you know, would you work with a dictator if he could give you secret information? Would you help if he could stop 9/11? Would you work with one of bin Laden's top lieutenants? I would, in a heartbeat. But that's the kind of question that when it hits a president's desk, it decides who we are as a people. And so I saw that issue and saw it today, and so of course I wrote about it.
All right, who is the dictator who worked as a spy?
I can't tell you. You know why I can't tell you, though? Because he's still alive.
I thought I'd give it a shot.
If his name gets out, they're going
to
kill him.
Brad Meltzer, the latest book is called The House of Secrets. Always good to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, sir. Always good to chat.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook, Steve Bertrand, couple of pages, Steve Bertrand Travel, Steve Bertrand on Books, or just an old-fashioned email as well, sbertrand@wgnradio.com. I'm glad you're along. Okay, people are going to graduation parties. My son's had a bunch this weekend. My wife went to a cousin's yesterday. It's Father's Day around the corner, so we thought we'd check in with Best Buy and see what's hot. Ryan Stanzel is on a phone line, and he joins us now. Ryan, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, how are you, Steve?
Good. So I've got the problem with my computer. Can you talk me through it here? Can we get this figured out?
Sure thing. Absolutely.
I want to talk to you about what sorts of gifts might be hot for dads around Father's Day, but I'm interested, too, in how many shoppers come into a Best Buy already knowing what they want? I mean, is your typical shopper now already looking online and figuring out before they even walk into the store?
You know, our research shows that about half of our people that come into our stores have looked online first. So they certainly have done their research, both on BestBuy.com, our app as well. You can actually talk live to a blue shirt from the app with some questions. But if you haven't looked online, you know, our blue shirts are so knowledgeable, and you can come on into the store, and they can definitely walk you through any purchase as well.
And so do you find then that changes the way you sell in the store?
I don't think necessarily it does. No, I think that, you know, it's an experience that is done both online and then in store. So I don't think for our blue shirts, you know, there might be a slight nuance and a difference if your customers looked online, but you just want to be the most knowledgeable you can when they come into the store.
All right. So tell me, what is it that is hot when it comes to Father's Day this year?
There's a few things. You know, 4K TVs, of course, are always big. That's certainly on my Father's Day wish list. I don't think I'll get one. But
you mean you're going to buy one for your dad? Is that what you're telling me, Ryan?
Exactly. He might be listening to it. He's on the hook now.
What is a 4K television? I don't even know.
It's got four times as much resolution as a normal television, so your picture's going to be that much clearer. You know, some things are starting to broadcast now in 4K. The Masters was. Movies are starting to get released now in 4K. So imagine your normal HD TV, and it's about four times the resolution. As you can imagine, wow. I'm sure your friends over at WGN TV are super excited about the extra resolution as well.
No, but their makeup salesmen are.
Exactly.
What else you got?
Portable headphones are huge. You know, I travel a lot for my work. We've got the Bose Quiet Comfort headphones. We've got some other, like the Jaybird Freedom. Those are actually sweat resistant, so you can not worry about getting them too sweaty and dirty as you're working out.
Let me tell you something. My life is sweat resistant, so I don't have to worry about that.
One of my favorite things coming out just in our stores about 2 weeks ago, it's called Physics. It's spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.
Uh-huh.
If you like beer, as I do, this can actually turn canned or bottled beer into fresh tasting tap beer. So it guys way smarter than I am invented this, but basically it uses sound wave technology to break down the particles. You get better foam at the end. I've tried it. It makes a canned beer taste just like tap beer.
Okay, so I think you just hit a home run here. So this will take a can of beer and turn it into, when you pour it in your glass, make it look like you got it out of the tap?
Exactly. It's tap beer at your home without having to brew it yourself. It kind of looks like a Keurig. It's about that size. Again, it's called Physics, F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.
Okay.
It uses sound wave technology. It doesn't take very long. You can do up to a growler size at once. And basically any bottle or canned beer, save for cider, like root beer, that kind of stuff. I got a couple of friends that literally they won't drink Stella out of a bottle again. They said it tastes that much better once you run it through Physics.
So you pour your glass into the, I'm going to say Keurig, but you pour your glass into the device and then, or your can, and then it comes out having changed?
Yeah, it literally, you just put the can of the, or the can of the bottle in there, and it's got a setting for each, and you hit the button, and a couple minutes later, you've got a full, again, up to 64 ounces. So if you just want one glass after dinner, you can do that. Or if it's the weekend and you're going to have some friends over, you can do that as well.
That's wild. So we had the founder of Sam Adams in not too long ago. And when he left, I think Michael, the producer, Michael Heidemann, I think he left us with a bottle or a can, and he said, here, drink this. It's just like it's out of a tap. And he said something like it uses sound waves. So, that must be sort of along the same lines then, I guess.
Yep, probably is. The other, I just want to throw in there, drinking-wise, the Nespresso Prodigio, the newest, it's a connected coffee maker. So, you can be upstairs watching TV or upstairs in your bed is how I use it and realize in the morning that, I need coffee in 10 minutes, hit a button on your phone. It'll tell you when you need to order more coffee. It's pretty amazing.
That's wild. Okay, so we can look at those things online at Best Buy and then find you on the floor and buy them from you.
Absolutely. We hope so.
Ryan Stancil, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it. And happy Father's Day. I hope you get that 4G TV.
Thanks, Steve. You
4K too. TV. See, 4K. I don't even know what it's called. All right, we'll talk again soon.
Care.
It's the
Thank
Business
you.
Lunch on 720 WG.